from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, on July 1st, Antoine Wilson took over as the superintendent of Oakland's public schools. Wilson was previously an assistant superintendent in Denver, where he was credited with raising the graduation rate of a high school struggling with gang violence. Raised by a single teen mother in Kansas, Wilson says poverty should not be seen as a reason to have lower expectations of students. Superintendent Wilson will join us to answer your questions about Oakland schools, the achievement gap, and the state's new system for funding K-12 education. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this hour, we welcome Oakland Unified School District's new superintendent, who officially began in that position the 1st of July. A former principal, Antoine Wilson, replaces Tony Smith and brings to the job a reputation for elevating high school graduation rates by 22% over 6 years as an assistant superintendent in the Denver public school system, as well as improving rigor in high schools and leading more young people to attend college after graduation. Superintendent Wilson joins us for this first Forum Hour, and we welcome you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. And you're a man in a hurry. I mean, you've said, I don't want to make no haste here, and speaking very ambitiously about changing the culture. Changing culture is a formidable task. Tell us about how you're going to do this.
Well, you know, I think it starts by just calling it out as a task. And so, you know, what we do know is that the school systems are set up to educate young people, and that it should be the primary focus. And that's what we want to do. So, one, it's just for me, it's just starting by saying that our focus is on educating young people and providing them with a quality education that prepares them for success in college, career, and later in their life. And so I think it starts there. And then from there, it goes on to creating systems that show that we actually care about the people that we have working for us in Oakland, working on behalf of our students. And also, it goes to the type of organizational structures we put in to support those people. So we intend to spend a good deal of time positioning ourselves to support our people better, to make sure that we are understanding the needs that they have, and at the same time, making sure that we are not taking a backseat to the types of expectations that we need to have for our young people, that we don't budge on that we say that we need them to learn, and we're going to do everything we can to help them do so.
Yeah, you said you see no reason for soft expectations of students. So the expectations, the bar is going to be lifted here. But you've also talked about social expectations and changing the social structure. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we do know is that it's really important that young people actually like school. And in liking school, it's hard to like school if a few things aren't there. One is schools need to be neat, clean, and safe, places where young people actually can feel comfortable and let their guards down. And if young people can do that, it means actually that the faculty feel safe and supported and all of that. And then from there, it really is about helping young people really understand what they're going to face when they're no longer in school. And, you know, we have to make sure that our students know that there are certain expectations that they will face when they're outside of school that will benefit them later in life. And we need to begin to prepare them for that and model those and expect those in our school buildings. And we'll be engaging in those conversations to make sure that our young people are aware of the expectations that the larger society has for them.
Well, your own personal story is pretty inspiring. You grew up in Kansas, a single teenage mother, grew up in poverty. And as a result of that experience, what you're saying is, despite the kind of poverty that has afflicted Oakland, I mean, your own mother said to you, you're not through with school until you get through with college, right? And so there were high expectations for you. But you have an achievement gap there, and you have, you know, poverty in Oakland that, you know, have riddled the schools with problems through the years here. And I don't want to necessarily put too much of a laser focus on that. But when you talk about changing the culture, you're also really talking about changing the culture of poverty?
Well, what I would say is this. First, you know, just to share that, you know, I was born in Kansas, and my mother moved us away and I moved me to Nebraska, and I ended up graduating from school in Nebraska. But what I will say is this, that it's not that poverty does not have an impact. Certainly, I can tell you that it does. There were things that I did not have growing up in school that my friends had. There were experiences that they had that I did not have. But then there were experiences that I had, you know, plans that they were making that I could not make. Opportunities that they were afforded that were not afforded to me. And certainly, you know, being hungry impacts some of the things that you feel in your mood on a day-to-day basis. So I'm not dismissing that. What I am saying, though, is that we know that our young people do need to get an education, and we need to know if they are hungry. We need to know if they're facing things outside of school that impact their learning. We need to do our best to help them with those things, connect them with the services that are available in the city, and really make sure that we're partnering with the city and then also community-based organizations to help them in that regard. That doesn't change the fact, though, that they need to get an education and that we are there to educate young people and that we should expect them to do well. We should support them in getting that education. We can't put our expectations around education aside as we help them through any issues that they have, very real issues that they have as a result of poverty.
When you talk about partnering with the city, you mean working closely with, for example, city council, the mayor, and so forth?
I think that we absolutely have to work closely with city council and the mayor and make sure that we are recognizing that there are a number of things that impact the lives of our young students. And many of those things are things that happen outside of the school. You know, I think it really does take a partnership to really focus on providing quality schools for all students.
Let's talk about the numbers, though, because, you know, when you've come here from Denver, it was highlighted that you brought up the rates of graduation, you brought up the rates of students attending college and so forth. The numbers we're talking about in Oakland, nearly half of the black and brown students don't finish high school in 4 years, and the non-English speakers is more than half those numbers. Graduation rate, Oakland, 59%, state of California, 80%. State average, 25% for dropouts, Oakland, 15%. I mean, these kinds of things, of course, I use the word formidable again, are almost staggering in many ways when you look at those numbers, because these are all individual human beings we're talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, what I would say is this, that I look at it in terms of where we're going and what we want to get done. And I think it starts with an emphasis on quality schools. And in Oakland, that really defining what is it that we believe that every young person deserves in terms of receiving a quality education, and then organizing ourselves to provide that. And everything else around that, I mean, although there are important issues that impact that, everything else is secondary to that, that we need to make sure that we do that. And if we focus on that, then we can increase all of those numbers. And in Denver, that has been the work. It has been about identifying the issue, recognizing where we needed to get better, and then focusing our attention there, all geared towards not graduating our kids from college, I mean, from high school as being the primary goal. That was a goal that we were focused on, but it is what do we need to do to help our young people after high school? And in Oakland, that's what we want to do. Yes, we need to graduate our young people from high school, but we need to recognize the things that we need to do starting back in transitional kindergarten. We need to recognize
maybe pre-K as
pre-K, but recognizing what we need to do from the moment that we have an opportunity to come in contact with young people all the way through the system to prepare them for success after high school, and graduating high school then takes care of itself.
Well, there was a study done when you were in Denver by Colorado Public Radio, our sister station there, and they said that there were a lot of problems with remediation, need of remediation. They weren't college ready, mm-hmm. these kids. They were graduating high school. They had their sheepskin or their diploma, mm-hmm. but they weren't ready for college. Mm-hmm.
So a few things. I mean, nationally, we have challenges nationally around ensuring that our young people are graduating college ready. So in Denver, there are a number of efforts to address remediation, we're already seeing the impact of that. And as you know, remediation rate is a measure of what you did 2 years ago. So the most recent data in Colorado shows the efforts that we took in 11-12. I think Colorado saw a 10% decline in remediation from our efforts from 2 years ago. We have partnerships with post-secondary education in Colorado that provide students opportunities to get access to college while they're in high school, and engage in classes that exempt them from remediation before they graduate. We want to have those same types of partnerships here. The remediation issue is an extremely important issue. We want to know that the value of the high school diploma is one that means that a young person is college ready. And it is something that we can absolutely do. But we don't want to wait for the state remediation rate to come out. It's such lagging data. What we really want to know is, when students walk across the stage, what percentage of those young people have the ACT scores, the SAT scores? What percentage of those students have met the state expectations around assessing out of remediation?
Or how many are proficient in math and English? I mean, you know, you have that as well across the board here. You have numbers that you have to obviously elevate to get them ready for college.
Proficiency in math and English, but also just preparation in the course and having the soft skills, the success factors that you need to have in order to be successful in college. All of that plays a role. College and career plays a tremendous role. And so there's a lot to do there, but certainly I don't see it as insurmountable.
As I said, you got your work cut out for you. We're talking to the new superintendent of Oakland Public Schools, Antoine Wilson, here with us in studio. And let me open the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join us. You are welcome to do so now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. So, again, feel free to join the program. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. There's a whole question also, Superintendent, about attracting higher quality teachers. And I know there was a special tax measure in Denver for higher pay and performance-based bonuses, those kinds of things. We can talk about those. But it's also the concern that less than 20% of the teachers are teachers of color.
Well, you know, I think that it makes a difference that young people have an opportunity to know that they can be successful in whatever they do. And one of the ways that you help young people see that is by them having an opportunity to see individuals who look like them or share common experiences, also teaching them. And so we have work to do in Oakland, like the rest of the country, in that. I think that, you know, actually Oakland is positioned better than the rest of the country in that regard, even though we do have more work to do. But I would say even more so than having teachers of color, which is extremely important, we want to get done, and is a big part of it, is making sure that our emphasis is on quality teaching, supporting those teachers, and ensuring that they are effectively meeting the needs of our young people. And if we can do that and also increase access to diverse candidate pools, we want to be about that.
You thinking about increasing school days, that is school hours?
Well, I think that you know, nationally, we need to see longer school days and longer hours. Now, what that looks like, you know, I think should be open for interpretation. I would say more of the same, if the same means boring types of instruction nationally and not putting young people in position to engage in some authentic learning opportunities, then absolutely, by all means, don't give them more of it. But if we're able to transform the educational system and scale up more opportunities for personalized learning, then extended day and time would be beneficial. And all of those things are the types of things that must be negotiated with our labor organizations, and we look forward to having those conversations with them.
Well, I look forward to bringing our listeners into this. Before I do, though, could you say something about the impact on Oakland schools of the new state funding formula from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, I think that the state funding formula provides a real opportunity for Oakland schools. It's really trying to leverage more resources to students who need the most support. We have, as was mentioned earlier, a number of students who families are in poverty. I think that is going to benefit us. We have a number of second language learners in Oakland, and we have a number of foster youth in Oakland. So the fact that the state is looking to prioritize more funds for those young people is a benefit. And then also, I believe, engaging with the community on the prioritization of those funds is an important benefit to Oakland as well.
You've also got unprecedented student input in terms of deciding on this funding and the use of it, $28 million for low income. But there's also been some concern about those who are successful being kind of left out of this, needing revenue but not getting it because they're successful.
Well, one of the things that we know is that there's not nearly enough funding in education in general. And, you know, we want to make sure, though, that we are setting a very high bar for all young people, and those young people who have already met the minimum expectations, that we accelerate them. And so as we go forward, what we want to do is we want to make sure that we are listening to all voices and being a school district that is available to all students, regardless of where they fall in the educational spectrum. We want to be about supporting them, and we certainly plan to get input from families whose students are across the educational spectrum in terms of student performance.
But you say you want to make school fun for students, make it challenging, make it exciting, inspiring, all of those kinds of things. A lot of truancy, a lot of problems with drugs and violence within Oakland that have to be faced and have to be factored into somehow the equation of how we're going to change this culture and how we're going to come out of it and really make school not only a safe place but an exciting place to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that it's really important that we establish really solid expectations around safety in our schools. And I can tell you firsthand, having experience and been around individuals who have dealt with, and family members who have dealt with alcoholism and drug issues, that those certainly have an impact on the lives of young people. It matters. But what I can also say is that being in environments that in the school environment that prioritizes safety, that prioritizes a focus on individual students' well-being, is paramount to a young person's success. So my own ability to be able to go to school and focus and not have to worry about those things preventing me from learning allowed me to do the things that I needed to do to get where I am today. And we want to provide that for all young people, recognizing that issues of drugs and other issues that you mentioned are things that are real, and that as schools we want to have support structures in place to help students and families who may be experiencing them.
You also want to have rigor. That's a word that's being used a lot in education these days. What does rigor mean to you?
Well, I mean, what rigor is really speaking to is first and foremost making sure that young people are actually challenged by material that is actually at grade level. And that's one. And then two, that we actually expect young people to meet the expectation. It's not merely just assigning things and saying, well, you just didn't get it. It's actually saying, no, this was really important. You really needed to learn it. And we're going to hold you accountable for learning it. That means that you need to spend some additional time. That means you need some additional support. We're going to expect you to do it because you need to be prepared for the next level. So it is really speaking to the fact that young people are actually challenged. They're engaged from bell to bell, and that they are ready for the next educational opportunity that presents them at grade level or above.
Again, our guest, the new superintendent of Oakland Unified Public Schools, Antoine Wilson, here with us in studio, and you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And let's go to our callers. We begin, Kuo, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to say, one, I'm a graduate from Oakland Technical High School. I went into UC Berkeley, and I was very prepared because I was in the Paideia program at Oakland Tech, and I was helped open school-based health center in East Oakland, and some of the youth that I work with and continue to work with and follow throughout their high school career have voiced to me what their concerns are. And I happened to do a visit at Oakland this past school year, and I sat in on a lot of my students' classes, and I was very disappointed. And for instance, in ninth grade honors geometry class, they were learning how to add and subtract. And then I went to an English class, ninth grade English class, and the vocabulary word for the day was beautiful. These are not high school level examples of preparation. And when I talk to my students, I say, you know, what is your main concern with the education you're getting? And they all say, you know what, Ms. Zapata, we have teachers who are chronically absent. At Oakland High, they had substitutes for their geometry class for 3 months straight before they found another teacher. And I also want to talk about at a lot of the high schools, the dress code. You know, I encourage you as a new superintendent to please do unannounced visits so you can really see what's happening. We have young girls wearing total halter tops, you know, and when we know that our girls are victimized in this prostitution ring that's in Oakland, and it's like I have students who are 2 hours late to school every day because they're more worried about what they're going to wear, you know, and I think that's another thing that needs to be keyed in on.
Cool, you raised a lot of issues here. I want to actually get the superintendent to respond to the content of what you just brought forward here.
Yeah, so thank you. So what I would say is that, you know, you're speaking about the ecosystem of which students attend school, and it gets back to the question that you were asking around rigor. We do want to work with our teachers and our school leaders to make sure that we're really clear on what the state standards are asking, what advanced placement standards are asking, and aligning the resources and training to help our teachers deliver upon that. The questions around substitutes, you know, I need to understand, you know, what's actually happening on the ground, and we will prioritize efforts to ensure that our young people are being taught by qualified teachers day in, day out. Those structures, those districts that have those structures, normally that it's been years of focused attention on making sure that they present an environment that educators want to be a part of. This whole piece around the environment and expectations for students, and she was touching on there at the end, that is extremely important. And what we have to figure out in Oakland is how we help our young people understand that we're not making value statements on their particular choices in clothing. It's just that there are some things that are appropriate for work and school and other things that are not. And so, you know, helping young people understand that having an expectation around dress for school or business, and recognizing that is not an indication that somehow they're less than in terms of the choices they make in their own personal time. That's extremely important. And it does take work with leadership and supporting the leadership and teachers to scale up those types of priorities and expectations in the schools.
But you wouldn't say dress code. I mean, you wouldn't go that far, or you don't think that that's appropriate for Oakland Public Schools?
What I would say is that I'm not going to say from a district perspective that all kids need to wear a uniform, if that's what you're asking me. As a principal, though, I was the first public high school principal to institute a uniform in a public high school in Colorado, after previously being vehemently opposed to uniforms. My point is, I can be convinced, if it's the right thing to do, that to support a principal who believes that that's the right thing to do after they've engaged with their community. And if it's about raising expectations and performance for young people, then that's what needs to be done, then that's what we'll do.
Well, what about a teacher who spends a whole class time on a word like beautiful? I mean, I think she was trying to intimate that this is not necessarily the most productive kind of academic discourse.
Well, I think that, again, it's really, you know, rather than honing in on any individual teacher, it's really about how well we support our teachers. And that involves observations, that involves feedback, that involves developing strong systems for that and ensuring that our classes are properly resourced and teachers have access to quality training. And I look forward to engaging with our education association to ensure that our teachers do have those needs, to have what they need.
Again, if you just joined us, our guest is Antoine Wilson. He is superintendent of the Oakland Unified School District. Just began the job July 1st. It's still kind of a honeymoon, and we'll find out what your thoughts are as well as any questions you might have. You're welcome to join us. Toll free 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending this hour with Oakland's new schools chief, Antoine Wilson, who's here in studio with us. And he began that job officially on the 1st of July. He was previously assistant superintendent in Denver, where he was credited with raising graduation rates of high school that were struggling with gang violence. And he himself was raised by a single teen mother in Kansas and Nebraska, and says poverty should not be seen as a reason to have lower expectations of students. Superintendent Wilson is going to take your questions here as well, and you can join us. We're talking about the achievement gap, about the state's new system for funding K-12 education, about a whole range of things, and we do welcome your involvement in the conversation. It's toll-free. Number available to you, 866-733-6786. You can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and a couple of listener comments from the website. One listener writes, "Welcome to Oakland. If kids cannot read, they cannot learn. You've not mentioned the problem of abysmal reading scores. The vast majority of OUSD students are not reading at grade level. Please identify two tactics you will use to raise the percentage of students reading at grade level by sixth grade."
So a couple things. One is, you know, clearly, it's important that young people are able to read. I mean, I think it starts with prioritizing, again, the needs of young people before they enter the system, and ensuring that they are focused on literacy from the moment they enter the system to the moment they exit. In terms of specific strategies, educating our and supporting our teachers, that is a strategy to ensure that young people can read. You get better at reading through reading. You get better at reading through working with educators who have access to the best pedagogy to help you improve as a reader. And that's where our focus is.
It also encourages you to read to
begin with. Well, it's encouragement, but it's the whole thing. It's the whole ecosystem. It's not one individual thing. It's an ecosystem that you establish around the importance of reading. It's an ecosystem that you establish around being in a classroom or in a school system that educates people to be excited about reading, that challenges them to be excited about reading, that accelerates young people who are ahead in reading, and encourages young people who have made significant gains in reading. And so that's what it is. That is what it's about. But access to quality resources, access to professional development, access to strong observation and feedback all goes to increasing reading scores and literacy scores. And it's not something that can be glossed over. You got to have adults in your life who prioritize it, who are supported, and are leveraging the best strategies to help you improve as a reader. And those are the types of things that we want to do. And partnering with families to make sure that they understand the importance of that. I am aware of issues in Oakland around libraries and librarians. Those are important issues, and that's an issue that I'm sure that some of the listeners are wondering about. When I talked about having a conversation around what we see as a valuable education in Oakland and prioritizing that, I'm including that in that conversation. I mean, obviously, if students do not have access to books and people who are supporting them, they're going to struggle.
Well, who's going into the classroom, though? I mean, are you going to have mentor teachers, or you have a system that really allows for monitoring what's going on in the pedagogy day to day?
Yeah, so thank you. So you have to have school leaders there, and school leaders need to be trained as instructional leaders. You need to have teacher coaches that are there. I would love to be in a position eventually where we have peer observers giving teachers feedback and supporting them and improving their practice. But we also want to create opportunities for parents who are interested in coming and volunteering, and others who are interested in volunteering and reading to our young people, to do that as well. So it's all of that. But the actual observation and feedback are should be given through a number of different means. School leaders, peer observers, teacher coaches, all helping teachers improve their practice.
Another listener writes, "Mr. Wilson, you mentioned organizational structure in your interview. Can you speak to how you will restructure OUSD, that is the Oakland Unified School District, particularly the leadership in the central office? The leadership in the central office has a long history of being ineffective. Case in point, Alameda County's grand jury findings of gross financial mismanagement and unproductive human resource practices. Please do something."
Yeah. So, you know, a big part of our work is around organization, that's what I am focused on over the course of the next several months, and that is listening to folks and actually trying to get down into the weeds as to how we actually function. So what I will say is that the product of that will be a different organizational structure. But you know, it's really important to say this, though. Regardless of how we structured, it's really the culture with which the structure exists in. And if the culture is not one that's focused on high expectations and accountability, then regardless of how I structure it, we still have the root cause. And so my interest is, yes, in identifying a better organizational structure. And I don't want to say better, but one that meets the needs of the young people and the educators in Oakland and the families in Oakland. But also, I want to make sure that our efforts are on elevating the culture and around high expectations and accountability within the district, throughout the district, not just central office, but central office, school sites, all of that. And that is working the issue. That is actually being out and in the community, understanding. And then as we begin to understand what becomes important, prioritizing that with the people who are working on behalf of the city.
That means you're going to be in a lot of schools. You had 86,000 students in Denver. Now you've got roughly in the Oakland school system about 46,000. So at least your workload has diminished somewhat in some numbers. But you're going to have to be out there a lot, maybe even ubiquitous if you can be.
Well, what I would say is this, that I won't be a stranger to visiting schools. It's part of my normal practice. I was responsible for as many students in Denver as I am right now in Oakland as the superintendent. And I was in classrooms. I was in schools. I met with students. I've already started doing that. I actually started doing that back in May on behalf of Oakland. And I will continue to do that as the school year starts.
And we'll continue to take more calls for you. We'll go to Carl in Oakland. Carl, join us.
Welcome, Superintendent Wilson. Thanks very much for taking part, and welcome to the district.
Thank you.
I have a daughter in a Hill school, and we have an excellent elementary school. But like a lot of parents, we're looking at our options, you know, moving out of the district, private school, and a large percentage of us are looking at are moving out. It's really unfortunate because we believe in public education. My question is, what are your plans or what are your thoughts on keeping the children from Hill schools in the district?
Yeah, thank you. So I absolutely believe it's important that we provide a school district where families feel like that their students can attend all the way through 12th grade. And that's extremely important. And so one of the things that we will be doing is putting a greater emphasis on our middle schools and making sure that there is leadership there to support middle school specifically, that we are working with our middle schools to actually engage more with our elementaries, our elementary parents, and really understanding what parents value in middle school education. Now, we did have this issue in Denver of young people, of families having students attend school in elementary school and then different options not going to district schools in middle school. And our emphasis was quite simple. It was partnering first and foremost with middle school parents, partnering with elementary parents, and increasing school safety, focusing on college and career readiness, backing that up to middle school, and increasing middle school options so that parents knew that their young people would have access to things such as world language and speech and debate and art and music, and at the same time, improving the rigor and academic achievement of students in middle school. So we do have that. I did have that experience in Denver, and plan to do the same types of things and work with middle school leaders to partner with elementary schools and parents to make sure that they feel comfortable sending their young people to our Oakland middle schools. And I know that I've met middle school leaders who are just as interested in that as well here in Oakland.
Well, I think it's great that you're putting emphasis on middle school. This is what many of the school reformers and theorists are saying has to be done. I mean, in addition to what we intimated before about going back to pre-K and kindergarten right on through. But you have the caller raises brings up another question. That is this chasm that you have in Oakland between wealthier neighborhoods and more impoverished neighborhoods. The wealthier neighborhoods are simply better schools in many instances because they're getting more economic support from the parents.
Yeah. So, you know, I think what we see here in Oakland around the conversations around schools in different parts of the city are not dissimilar from what I've heard in four other districts prior to Oakland. And so I think it's important to provide that context that it is similar. And but I think, again, it's around the conversation we need to have around quality schools for all young people. And then that then raises the question of equity and making sure that we have a definition of equity that focuses on ensuring that every young child, every student gets what they need to be successful. And when you recognize that that is what you're trying to approach in equity, some young people are going to need more. Their schools are going to need to provide more resources than other schools, more opportunities for families to engage, more opportunities to support students with participating in extracurricular and co-curricular activities. That should not be done to the detriment of students who are in better provisioned schools or in schools where their parents may be more active in terms of being at the school. Last thing I do want to say on this issue as well is, you know, we need to recognize that because not all parents can come to the school, regardless of where they live in the city, that does not mean that they don't care about their young people being attending quality schools. What I would tell you is my mother was working. And so the message around school engagement was given to me. It was simple. Boy, that school had better not call me and tell me that you were causing any trouble at that school. She was trusting that the school was taking care of the business that they were charged with and that they would call her if they needed her assistance with me. And I recognize that some families are in that same predicament because they are having to do other things. We want to, as a school district, be available to those families to help them understand how they can also remain engaged, as my mother was, even though she could not regularly attend the school.
Well, here's a listener, Karen, who says, I used to teach in Oakland. Discipline was a major problem. When students were sent to counselors because they were so disruptive, it was impossible to teach. The majority of the time they were back in 10 minutes. Teachers were told students must return because we could not deprive them of an education. The argument that those students were depriving fellow students of their education fell on deaf ears. And I always thought that parents did not get enough support. They were told, help your student, but never told how to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot there in that question.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I would just start by saying is that, you know, we absolutely want to make sure that our schools are focused on being safe and that we are prioritizing education. And so we do need to do that. We need to leverage strategies that send that expectation to students.
I think they're also talking about just keeping order within the classroom.
Well, order within the classroom, order within the school is extremely important. I mean, I had a mentor who told me that we can't educate without order. And so certainly that was a philosophy that carried me as a principal. And one thing that anyone who had an opportunity to attend any of the schools that I was at would certainly tell you, they were orderly. And that was even going into schools that had not been that before I got there. So certainly believe in order. But I also believe in leveraging restorative approaches as well. And you can do both. It's not a decision of one or the other. You can do both, and we need to do both in order to do that. It's also about building our teachers' baskets of strategies to ensure that the classrooms are engaging. It is real that if classrooms are not as engaging, young people, and they have downtime, they're going to try to fill it. And the ideas that they come up with how to fill that time are not conducive to their learning. So all of these things interact. But absolutely, we must have order. Absolutely, young people must listen to the adults who are giving them instruction. The number two expectation that I had for our students after attend school and be prepared to learn was always do what any staff member asked you to do the first time asked. And so certainly I expect us as a school district to send that message to young people. At the same time, those young people and their families need to know that we mean to find ways that leverage young people being in school as much as possible. We're not going to find any excuse to try to get rid of them.
Well, let's talk for a moment before we go to more calls here about concern over policing students and driving them out through expulsions and so forth. There's this language which has become almost pro forma and boilerplate, school-to-prison pipeline and all that. But now in Oakland, like Pasadena and San Francisco, you have parental assent that's required for police interrogation. You think that's a good idea?
I absolutely do. I mean, and I look at it from this perspective. If I were, I am a parent, So, and, you know, I have a young daughter who's in middle school and kids in elementary. And I couldn't even begin to communicate how upset I'd be if I knew the police was talking to one of my children and I couldn't get a call that told me that that was happening. And so I don't think it's too much to ask for parents to be aware of that. And that doesn't interfere with investigations. And as a principal, I know it's important to get information and I know it's important to investigate. And the majority of parents that I've come across, they aren't going to interfere with that. But at the same time, there are things that young people aren't going to understand. And it's important that they have an adult that they trust. They're helping them understand what they're even being asked. And I think that's appropriate to do that.
We'll bring some more of our callers on, and we'll go next to you. Alita, good morning.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying this conversation. So I was a teacher at Oakland Unified for a few years. One of my years I taught at a reconstituted school in East Oakland and the other one at a charter school. And my concern at both of those schools, I'm no longer with Oakland Unified. I felt like I had to leave because I had absolutely no support from the administrators. But my concern is about their training. It appears as if they're not trained properly, or one of the principals at the charter school, he didn't have any teaching experience. And he told us at our first staff meeting, this is a business, not a school, and I want your shoes shined by tomorrow. And we were shocked because some of us had master's degrees and we went to really great colleges and universities. And so at any rate, at that time, we were teaching open court and it was a scripted curriculum. And at every single Wednesday staff meeting, we were showing reports of how poorly the students were doing and why our scores were so low. And a lot of the teachers at the charter school were new, including myself. And so the morale started to go down. And we were trying our best, but we had to stick to the script. You cannot deviate from it. If students had any behavioral problems, even fighting, we were told, if you send your students to the office, you will be observed either by myself or one of our three coaches. So we had constant observations to these coaches, like math and reading coaches, but they never gave us feedback, even when we asked. So we were concerned about what their role was in the school. And so I guess for me, I think that's why we had a lot of teachers leave at the end of the year. They felt really disrespected, unheard, and we were all trying our best. We stayed late. Some of us stayed till 6 or 7 p.m., and it felt like, and we had a nurse, but she came only once a week. And so luckily, she came to my room a couple of times, and you know, I have great classroom management, but when you have about 28 students in a classroom and 2 to 3 special needs students and you don't have an aide, it's really hard to differentiate and address all of the students' needs, because one of my students, I was told by the nurse, was born at 1.5 pounds with crack in her system, and she screamed all day, and I wasn't allowed to send her out of the room, so the entire room was affected, and we couldn't really have great classroom learning. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at. If you do have observations of schools, I think charter schools really need to be observed, because there's no accountability. And when those principals are hired, we find out that they got kicked out of 2 or 3 other schools. And we're like, well, why do they end up here in East Oakland where we need the best principals, not the mediocre ones? So, that's my comment. I think that there needs to be more training of administrators and to make sure that they treat staff with respect.
Melita, I thank you for those comments. And in fact, I want to dovetail them and get the superintendent's response to both what Alita brought up and a kind of relevant comment in an email from a listener named John, who says, Colorado piloted a program called Mutual Matching. In short, if an OUSD teacher wished to transfer to another school with an opening, the proposal required interviews between the receiving school and the teacher. Unfortunately, Oakland Education Association rejected this proposal as it went against their core belief that seniority should prevail instead of whether or not a teacher is actually effective. Recent state ruling in the Vergara case has called this unconstitutional because it negatively and disproportionately impacts the quality of education that poorer students of color receive. With such huge institutional barriers as strong as labor unions, how do you plan on holding ineffective staff, leaders, teachers accountable when labor unions can't, and evidence overwhelmingly suggests these adults should not be working with children?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's paramount that our students have qualified and effective teachers working with them day in, day out. I mean, it's just paramount. And it's even more so, and the caller alluded to this, in situations where you have traditional low performance, you have schools that are priority schools that need to get better. You have to have educators who are effective.
But you also have to have accountability for those educators if they are not effective.
You have to have accountability for educators throughout the system. Whether that's in the classroom, whether that's school leaders, whether that's centrally, you got to have that accountability throughout the system. That said, you have to, I certainly believe that it's important that students are taught by educators who want to be in their school, who actively sought out that opportunity and were interviewed by personnel committees and school leaders, and they were selected to be in that school. I believe that's extremely important that is the standard. In any other place in education, service sector, you want to make sure that you are being served and supported by people who want to teach you. And that doesn't speak to quality of teachers, but there people do have preferences about where they want to be. And to place someone at a place there that they didn't choose and a community that didn't choose them, I think it is a recipe for continued struggle. And it's one that I personally do not favor. And anything that needs to be negotiated with associations, that's what we will do. We aren't going to go against any agreements that we currently have. The case will carry itself out through the courts. I do want to get to this point though that the teacher was making, the caller was making, around observations and feedback. We absolutely plan to begin to scale up efforts to provide our leaders with more support. They're asking for it. And as a former principal, I know it was always great to be a part of professional development that would expand my practice and that would allow me to increase my skills. And we want to be about that. And then in doing that, we want them to provide feedback to their teachers. It's important. I think that's what the Education Association is asking for. Teacher after teacher I have spoken to, that's what they want. It's important, though, that we create a culture where people understand that regardless of where you are in your career, it's paramount that you receive it, that you receive observation and feedback. You never stop growing. We're going to start working on that towards that this year, and we expect to partner with our associations to leverage up systems that we can both agree on, and I believe that it can be done, put us in a position where we aren't paralyzed by previous concerns or inactions that may have been an issue in the past.
Well, what about the unions and the role that they play? I mean, particularly, you know, we've done programs with Diane Ravitch, who's very much a defender of the unions and mm-hmm. their important role, integral role as she sees, and then mm-hmm. Michelle Rhee, who sees things from a very different perspective, thinks mm-hmm. the unions are protecting teachers and keeping bad teachers. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, there's always the implication, as there was in this last email I read, that somehow the unions are protecting teachers who shouldn't be in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that unions, I think they provide an important role. And ultimately what they're interested in is ensuring that the conditions of their membership are supportive, that they are appropriate, that they allow them to provide the type of service that they're intended to provide, that they want to provide for young people. So I'm not going to scapegoat education associations. What I will say is that it is also important to make sure that we understand what our top priority is. And our top priority is meeting the needs of young people. That's their education. That is ensuring that they're receiving a quality education. And if it requires sacrifice on the part of all of us, myself, it requires sacrifice on the part of principals and teachers, then we need to make sure that we're willing to do that. And we're a district that says that we are going to prioritize the needs of young people first. And I believe that you can do that without scapegoating teachers as the cause of all the issues in education, because I don't believe that.
Well, before I go to another caller, I want to read a comment from a teacher's point of view who says, Dear Mr. Wilson, I've been a dedicated Oakland teacher for 10 years. I love my job. And I want to continue my important work in Oakland. However, I'm also a single mother of two struggling to raise two children in the Bay Area. Oakland teachers are infamously underpaid. Every year, the district loses great teachers due to low pay. What can you do to retain teachers like myself who are considering moving to another district because of financial needs?
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, this issue of teacher compensation is a big, important part of what we want to do to ensure that we do create an environment where we show that we value our people. And California was in a particularly difficult situation, and I know Oakland was impacted by that. I think Oakland made some moves that showed that they did care about teachers. They weren't furloughing teachers. They continued to provide a really strong benefit package for teachers, and I don't think those things can be diminished, certainly coming from places that weren't able to do that. But compensation and pay is important, and we will be in dialogue with our educator associations to work on ways in which we can do that. I do need to say this in Oakland, though. This issue cannot be separated from other issues in Oakland. Paying teachers, reducing class size, and then the number of schools that we operate all play a role in what we do in Oakland. And we need to make sure that our priority is on providing every young person what they need. And I certainly believe compensation of teachers is an important part of that priority. We need to make sure, though, that is something that we figure out, and we're willing to make some decisions that allow us to do that as a community. And I look forward to leading that process.
Well, we're running short on time. I want to get one last caller in here. Feliciano, hi. You're on.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning.
My question, you mentioned earlier that the culture in the district was in some ways more foundational than the structure itself. I wanted to kind of push back on that a little bit and bring up a couple facts around the structure of the school administration. From my understanding, the OUSD has one of the highest admin-to-teacher ratios in the state of California, part of which leads it to the district to consistently fail to meet the 55% requirement of its general fund to be spent on instructional aides and teachers in the classroom, which then means that the district incurs fines from the state year after year, which the district then fights with legal fees. So it's millions of dollars in fines.
And that's a whole entangled process in itself. Can I get a quick response from you on that, Superintendent?
Yeah, what I would just say is that I do think that both are important, and I think that issue speaks to a culture issue, and that is what type of ecosystem do we put in place to ensure that our young people are prioritized, and do we focus more resources into the classroom in order to ensure that young people have what they need? I think that's important.
And I wish you good luck. Thank you for spending this hour with us.
Thank you.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.